fans, listeners, wrestling extraordinaires, assumed human beings, any kind of living organism, cats, dogs, birds, if you got a heart that beats and you got ears and you're listening, welcome. This is the RSN Podcast. My name is Nick Lopez. I am the editor-in-chief of ProWrestlingOpinion.com. We offer in-depth analysis of weekly television like Raw, NXT, SmackDown, Lucha Underground, Ring of Honor. And we also do pay-per-view reviews and previews and predictions. And I'm going to throw it to my man Rich.
What's up, guys? This is Rich.
And we also got Sal.
What's up, guys? How's it going?
And if you have checked out any of our past episodes, you'll know the three of us have shot the breeze pretty well on a whole wide array of topics. We got episodes about the rise and fall of WCW. We did ECW episode. We've done underrated, overrated. Tons of stuff you could check out. But for this particular episode, and we're happy we have you, this one is going to focus on something a little bit, all right, maybe it's been accentuated of late, but it never really got the attention that it truly deserves, and that's going to be women's wrestling. Usually when you think of wrestling, guys like Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, The Undertaker, Triple H, they come to mind. But for this next hour, we're going to focus on true athletes, people like Trish Stratus, people like Lita. We're even going to throw like the Bella Twins in there, people who are in there for the entertainment factor. And we're going to mix it all up, and we're going to go back and forth and touch upon all the various eras of women in wrestling. And we're going to start, and I'm going to throw it to my man Sal, and we'll slowly start with the beginning history of women in wrestling.
Yes, indeed. I mean, women's wrestling has come a long way. And, I mean, you know, if you go all, like, you can go all the way back to the origins, you know, it's been a very, very long time, you know. It's, you know, most people just think that origins of the women's wrestling was, like, you know, Elizabeth. But in reality, there's actually been a longer history behind that. So, you know, that hasn't been very spoken of. That hasn't been very detailed on. A lot of people haven't gone out and spoken about it. I mean, when you talk about origins of women's wrestling, this goes back to the AWA days, NWA days, you know, all that stuff. A lot of things happened during those eras, you know. A lot of big names came out of that as well. If you notice, a lot of names that recently passed, two great names probably. Fabulous Moolah, who was a great champion for almost 28 years. That's the longest title reign in history of any champion. And that's a testament, because most people just look at Bruno Sammartino and think that he is the longest reigning champion in the history of WWE for 8 years. But if you look back, you'll see she was actually holding for 28 years, and she has gone, and this is the most, like, nobody hasn't been able to beat this record. So it's a testament to what's, you know, how women's wrestling has been, you know. And, I mean, it started out in AWA inside, you know, the many different promotions and territories over there. Then it went into the NWA days, which was also another subsidiary of the end of the, you know, AWA and all that, Vern Gagne. Then after that, good old Vince McMahon came in with his innovative new product, Senior, I'm talking about. And then the, you know, they broke off, and then this is what we see basically right now. But, you know, there's a lot more that happened following that, and then that caused what it is now today, you know?
Yeah, I definitely do think people like Moolah and, you know, Mae Young, they did have a very good chance to excel in their era. And, you know, with the backing of their promoters, they really did get the chance to do that. The only thing I might, you know, comparing the present with the past is you probably would get a 28-year title reign. But, you know, this is a point I like to bring up, something that when CM Punk was champion for 434 days. Yeah, I actually said CM Punk. Sue me, okay? But
how would you say that, Nick? How dare you?
I know.
You betrayed us.
Terrible, terrible.
That son of a bitch.
He shows off the tracks already.
Hey, at least he didn't. At least he didn't say Chris Benoit.
Oh God. No.
That's another sin.
Oh no! How could we?
No.
But bringing it back to things, when CM Punk was a heel champion and he was bragging, you know, half the storyline, you know, about how he was the true champion of the modern era because he was defending his title, you know, almost every week as opposed to, you know, back then when they would have a show like maybe once a few months. So it would be easier for them to have the belt for a longer reign of time when you only had to defend it once every few months. You know, it's a little bit different now in this era to carry a reign of, you know, such importance, but I would say like maybe the closest person to that is Trish Stratus, and I think that was just mainly because she held the title. I think for a good 400 and something days she was Divas champion sometime in the middle 2000s. I'm not 100% sure of that, but thinking of, you know, women's title reigns and how much that has been emphasized lately, nothing has really come close to that. And I actually think it's amazing that WWE never actually bothered to compare Nikki Bella's reign to Trish Stratus, but it probably was smart on their part because, you know, 301 probably looks really bad next to something like 462.
Well, the reason why I think they emphasized Nikki so much was just to erase AJ Lee out of wrestling in total, because that was the only thing left of AJ Lee and her dominance.
Basically. I feel at the same time, though, that kind of derail the Divas Revolution, the quote-unquote Divas Revolution. I think it was just maybe just bad timing. I think it suffered because of that. But, you know, this is something we could, you know, touch up upon later. What we'd like to do right now is go back a little bit in time and maybe look into, you know, athletes of the 90s, how women's wrestling played a role in, you know, the Monday Night Wars. I don't think anyone's going to forget the time Medusa, you usually know her as Alundra Blaze in WWE, the time she went to WCW, basically went on live national television, held the WWE Women's Championship in the air above a trash can, and dropped it in. It still stands out as a huge symbolic era of the Monday Night Wars. I want to get your guys' thoughts on this. You know, this is something that I still think is one of the most probably infamous angles, but it also, I think, helped stir a little controversy that might have been needed at the time.
Well, I mean, you know, when you talk about angles, that's a very, you know, you hit the nail on the head right there, because if you actually think about back in the day, Divas and women's wrestling is all surrounded with angles. Because if you look way, like, even, you know, further on, you guys are talking about Trish and Lita and, you know, Medusa and all this. All these things happened, and they were surrounding a lot of controversy, you know, a lot of things that were portrayed as real life or not real life, storyline, fictional, you know, all this stuff. I mean, you know, if you go back, there's a long line history. I mean, especially when Medusa tossed that title, the down, everybody, you know, it was a shock. Everybody's like, oh, my God, because it brought some emotion to everybody, you know. And I think WWE did a smart way of driving emotion from people. I mean, you can look this back at, in the early 90s, probably late 80s to early 90s, with a very, very infamous name, Randy Savage, and with her Dowling Princess, Miss Elizabeth. Everybody was surrounded with that angle. That was the first wrestling angle, if you really think about it. Because most people didn't really, you know, they saw the women, they mostly saw the men. You know, there was this male-dominant complex over there in that time, you know? That time period especially. Men were the ones that were always in the ring. women would be either the managers, the valets, they would be standing on the ringside just watching everything and, you know, grabbing the attention of the audience, that's all. But that was the actual interactive role that Elizabeth played. And, you know, and as a result of that, you have angles like Medusa tossing the belt out, Trish, Lita doing all these crazy things, you know, there's all these, with the male superstars getting involved with the female superstars, there's a manager angle, jealousy, this, that. That was probably the root of it, you know? So I think, you know, especially when we talk about angles and women's wrestling, they go hand in hand, you know?
That's true.
What about you, Rich? What would you say about, you know, like, you know, especially with Medusa, you know, tossing the belt? You know, I was a 90s kid. I didn't have cable back in the day, so I actually didn't see this. But, you know, I mean, you know, whenever you talk about wrestling and seeing something live as opposed to seeing it afterwards, it's a totally different reaction. I think you guys can agree on that, right? So, yeah. You know, I mean, how, you know, you guys were probably there. Did you ever see that, like, in live? Or
I never saw it, like, live in person, but I was watching Raw
on TV.
Yeah. I was watching Raw and Nitro both simultaneously because there was no DVR back then. So it was either one or the other. So I would always flip back. But when I saw that, I was actually in a very high state of shock. But a lot of people would say that Hulk Hogan and the Outsiders are the ones who started the Monday Night Wars. I think that was the first shot. Actually, I think Medusa dropping the title into the garbage started the wars.
The thing is, the funny thing is, we touched up on this on our Rise and Fall WCW episode, but we're going to reiterate it again. Bischoff was smart in how he did a whole series of things. You know, he brought in Hall, Nash, he had the Medusa thing happen, all within weeks of each other in a very close time period. You know, if you have anything like that happening on your TV show next to Raw at the time, of course people are going to tune in. They want to see what the hell is going to happen next because you never knew what was going to happen. I just happened to love the Medusa angle because that actually, you had a woman at the forefront of these storylines, you know, actually doing something controversial. And I think that might have been a slap in the face, perhaps. At least I think it might have been a slap in the face to, you know, the traditionalist era, you know, that might have been, you know, back in the 80s with Elizabeth. I think she was a huge part of what made wrestling popular back then. You know, who wouldn't have wanted to be with Elizabeth or wanted to be Elizabeth? Anyone could look at, like, I'm going to just bring up SummerSlam 88. This was a main event match. I believe it was Hogan Savage against the Mega Bucks. Elizabeth actually played a factor in the main event by standing on the apron and basically raising up her skirt to show a bikini. This was very risque at the time, and, you know, it basically led to the finish because it distracted the heels. Oh my god, whoa, what is that on the apron? And then you got, like, schoolboy pinned. But I think that was, like, probably the first time you probably saw any kind of risqueness. Obviously, that would be times 10,000, you know, if you fast forward about 10 years in WWE. But I think it was just pretty interesting just in how the 80s, how it wasn't all traditionalist. You did have a few moments of, like, shock and jaw drop. But, you know, it's interesting how they try to shake things up. But I think when people think of the 80s, there are a few arguments that, you know, that was probably maybe the most athletic time for women's wrestling. You had the Jumping Angels from Japan at the time. They were this big tag team, two Japanese women's wrestlers. If you haven't seen any of their matches, I'd recommend you look them up. It's insane, you know. I think they've been a huge influence on even the wrestlers that we see going around today, lighting up NXT. What do you guys think?
Rich, you?
Well, the only thing I could disagree with what you just said, was you said that the 80s was the most athletic divas. I could argue with late 90s, early 2000s, with Trish, Lita, even though they were eye candy, Tori Wilson, Stacy Keibler.
Well, I mean,
that era.
Sorry to interrupt you, Rich. I mean, around that era, right? First, let's talk about how, you know, Lita and, like, Sable, you know, like Lita, Sable, all these big names, how they're brought up, you know? I mean, because if you look back at their history, they were brought up as, like, you know, they were brought up as models and dancers and all those other entertainers, like the Nitro Girls, for example. Eye candy, like you said, you know, you just said that right there, that point right there. But, you know, I think, like, you know, I mean, what were you going to say about, you know, the Trish and Lita, you know?
That, like, basically what I was going to say was I feel those were the two most athletic divas ever because they took bumps like the male wrestlers would and not have second thoughts about it.
Do you think they were born as wrestlers or did they have to go through the learning curve?
Well, Trish said that she had a little athletic background because she was athletic. She was like a fitness trainer.
Yeah.
But she was also a swimsuit model.
Yeah.
So she had to interpret both of them into her character. Lita was just a natural born athlete.
True. I mean, when you see Lita's story, if you've ever seen it, on her Hall of Fame speech, she was talking about how she started out in Mexico and then went all over the world, and, you know, she went to Japan and all the other locations. She scratched and clawed her way into the business. Now, like, you know, I mean, when you see Trish, I mean, didn't she said she was a model, she was a fitness trainer. Two different backgrounds, right? Like, you know, how would you say that was kind of how you would get heat and how you were seen in the business? Because, like, you know, how Lita, like, she showed that passion with, you know, how she was telling her story. Like, you know, she was, like, you know, she was passionate about being a wrestler. She all went all the way down to Mexico. She didn't pay for, like, a little wrestling school here, like, next door. She went all the way to Mexico to wrestle, being possibly robbed and all this other stuff. While Trish, it feels like everything was handed to her. Would you guys say that?
I don't know. It's a little bit funny, because even though Trish Stratus and Lita did eventually come around in the same era, their upbringings were a little bit different. If you remember when Trish Stratus first emerged on the scene, I think this was like 2000, she started out managing Tess and Albert. The tag team was called TNA, and if you remember
TNA that actually people
yeah,
care about.
Yeah, if... I see what you did there. But if you remember her outfits when she first debuted, she had I believe it was like the top hat, and then she had like the very, very, very risque clothing, and then she was doing all these model shoots and just parading around in lingerie. She was a very sexually driven character. We didn't see a lot of the athletic stuff early on, but keep in mind at the same time, this was like 1999, 2000. I believe Lita first debuted as the valet of S.A. Rios. She was pulling out moonsaults from like her first weeks on television. This was all very, you know, impressive at the time. She had the bright red hair. She definitely made an impression on everyone. Like, oh, this girl could fly, you know. People weren't used to seeing that kind of thing, you know, emerge above all the eye candy. Sable is probably going to be credited with the person that started making, you know, the Attitude Era kind of shock angle kind of thing. If you remember her storyline with Mark Marrow, and if you remember, they used to have those competitions, and she basically came out with no bra and with the two handprints.
I remember
very
that.
Risque stuff. So it's just amazing how Lito is able to come out, you know, in this kind of era and be looked at as an athlete first. She had the looks, too, at the time. She's always retained good looks, obviously. But, it, you know, no one's going to doubt her athletic abilities. And I think it's just amazing how Trish Stratus, you know, through time, picked up all of this. She became the complete package diva, basically. Her matches later in her career were downright fantastic. I don't think there's any doubting that. Obviously, her matches against Lita were probably a factor in this, too. As you know, they became very close friends, and the rest is history.
What's really interesting is how these people, they started out doing one thing, seeing certain things as only one thing that they're going to do, and they ended up becoming something bigger. Sable, as you know, she probably was at the forefront of bringing about the Attitude Era with all that risque stuff, you know, being in Playboy. That was the first time that Playboy and the Diva, you know, WWE, was in conjunction with each other. That never really happened before. But, I mean, you know, let's talk about WCW. You know, I mean, WCW really doesn't get that much credit. They don't really get into any, you know, any kind of credit for women's wrestling. I mean, when you look back, what names do you think really, you know, I mean, you brought up the point before, you know, Nick, that women's wrestling was more of an athletic era in the 80s, and we had Rich going ahead and saying that, no, it's late 90s that was the era, you know, that brought out the most athletic. I mean, when you talk about promo, what about promos, you know? Which era do you think brought out more of the promo stuff, you
know? Diva-wise with promos?
Because, when you think about it, like, in WCW, this is 1980, like, when they were coming out of the territory era and going into the Monday Night Wars, there are people like Sherry Martel, people like Luna Vachon, you know, here and there in the WWE. They were making these crazy promos, and people gravitated towards that, you know? They were kind of mesmerized by that, like, oh, shoot, like, damn, you know, what the hell? Like, that's interesting. That's, you know, it's crazy, but it's interesting. Plus, when you saw Luna and in the Goldust, you know, that was kind of like, well, what the hell's going on, you know? These guys are freaks, what the hell? I mean, you know, how would you say, you know, promo-wise? And then, you know, I mean, you see in all these other divas, you know, in their promo talent, Stephanie McMahon, with all of her, you know, different encounters with and many different stars, The Rock, Chris Jericho, you know, Triple H, you name it. You know, I mean, what would you guys say would be the better promo era, you know?
Well, in my opinion, the best promo era would be, to be 100% honest, it hurts me to say this, now. From AJ to anyone now.
I'm going to disagree with that. I'm actually going to point to the Attitude Era because everybody was outspoken then. You had long segments between, like, Trish Stratus. You had Stephanie McMahon, who was pretty much just opening every Raw, just shouting at the top of her lungs. She was a good foil to Chris Jericho. As you remember, there are countless promo segments, which were downright hilarious.
They were hilarious.
They played off each other really well. Lita, I don't remember her doing much talking early on. She was more of just a straight-out athletic type. But you had other folks like Jackie, Jacqueline. She was kind of like a complete package too. She was very loud in the ring. Actually, when you come to think of it, like Naomi, I kind of draw a parallel between her and Jacqueline. Like, they almost remind me of each other.
True, they do.
That's like, true. The Naomi's
loud,
more athletic,
kind
though.
Of style. Obviously, this was before Jackie went country and TNA, but in terms of, like, the Attitude Era, Jacqueline, you know, it's very close to that character, just maybe a bit more toned down and, you know, PG. But I do think there are some parallels between, you know, present day and the past. But, you know, going back to things, I do think the Attitude Era was probably the most memorable for segments. Who's going to forget the Stephanie McMahon, Trish Stratus little feud? They had a match in No Way Out 2001 that was actually pretty good. If you remember, that was a hardcore match. even in, like, 2002, I mean, this is probably leading more towards the Ruthless Aggression era, but if you remember Trish Stratus and Victoria, they had a hardcore match at Survivor Series 2002. I believe they were ironing. There was an ironing board in that match. There was a fire extinguisher. And then the storyline heading into the match was also interesting because it revolved a bunch of backstage hidden camera segments of Victoria talking in a mirror. Like, mirror on the wall. What does Trish Stratus think of me? You know, she was, like, obsessed with Trish Stratus. And, you know, I believe the segment right before that match had her break the mirror because she thought Trish Stratus was talking to her and she didn't like what she was hearing. You know, just little crazy things like that. Victoria was like the first kind of quote-unquote crazy chick to really make it work in WWE long before the days of AJ Lee. And then you had just the era itself. You were able to get like women's hardcore matches. You're not going to get that nowadays for better or for worse. But I think it would be interesting to see what these ladies could do, you know, if they were able to do that. But I think that's part of actually what makes these NXT ladies, you know, in their matches pretty good. I'm going to point to the most recent match between Sasha Banks and Bayley. If you notice, the steel steps were used in there countless times. They brawled around the arena, which is very hardcore, you know, hardcore championship-esque. There are little elements here and there, but, you know, I still think the Attitude Era was best for, you know, promo segments and anything in general. I don't know what you guys think about that.
I agree with you, but I feel that AJ, amazing on the mic. Paige, amazing on the mic. Charlotte has grown into a good promo cutter. Naomi, good promo cutter. Sasha is just amazing on the mic also. And then you also have the downfall of Sal's favorite diva, Eva Marie. Because, you know, Sal loves her so much.
Oh, man, she's like...
You have to rise before you could fall. She has never rose. I don't care.
No, there is no rise with her. She's just going straight downhill. I mean, what we're going to do, we're going to save that for later. I mean, that's a whole different topic if we were to talk about it. But, I mean, you guys were talking about how, you know, there was the era was, you know, the Ruthless Aggression. There was a big surge, you know, of talent coming through. You had Jackie, you had Lita, you had all these great names over here doing a lot of stuff and doing a lot of things that are kind of different. Because, I mean, you know, they were talking about something back in the, I think one of the WWE Network, they had like a little documentary. They were talking about how they would have these girls, right, whenever they told them to come out, fight like women, fight like divas, not like the men. So, I mean, that's kind of drawing a point there, you know, because, you know, there was this kind of prejudice, you know, where the women were only told, okay, that, you know, you get into cat fights, you do this, no hitting, none of this other stuff, just slaps and cat fights, because, you know, that's more of the Jerry Springer thing, like, oh my god, you know, they're fighting, oh shit, you know, everybody wants to watch it. But I think over time, that kind of got like, okay, what the hell, we're only going to see this for 5 minutes, and that's it, we're just going to sit down. So I think that's what people just went, okay, you know, they just got fed up with it. I mean, from there on, you see the, you know, leading up to that, 2001 to 2003, you had bras and panties matches, pillow fights, you know, attracted, you know, most male demographic, 18 to 30, you know, that was, wow, you know, we're kind of happy about that. But did it really, like, you know, did it really degrade wrestling? Like, you know, I think it really did get in the way, you know? Like, you know, to see how the women were, I mean, in a way, they were kind of disrespected because they only gave it limited time. In order for them to draw some, draw an attendance, like an audience to act in a certain way, they had to do this. They had to take off their clothes. They had to have bras and panties. And at the end of the match, somebody had to get everything taken off. You know, that's kind of degrading, I think, you know? What would you guys say?
That was probably one of the lowest points, I think, in women's wrestling history.
I agree, because now if you look at women wrestling now, you had the first Divas title match to headline NXT event, a 30-minute Iron Man match. Where else in women's wrestling history will you see that?
If
I recall, I don't remember that ever happening.
Actually,
there was.
This is probably a good segue to that. Around the Ruthless Aggression era, which is
December.
About 2005.
No, it was 2003, I think, right?
2004, actually. I don't remember if it was for the championship.
It was, I think. Yeah.
Trish Stratus and Lita did main event a episode of Raw, and it was hyped up as the main event match. I believe it was the same match that Lita, I think, nearly broke her neck on a suicide dive. She landed really awkwardly. You know, everyone was cringing when she fell.
And she still continued the match, which was crazy.
Still continued the match. This was on a documentary on the WWE Network. You know, they touched up a lot on the match itself and how groundbreaking it was. I do think they got a little cutesy with it. I don't think it was that great of a match, but just the history aspect of it, you know, it was very groundbreaking at the time. Just maybe not as high in quality, but given that time of both Stratus and Lita's careers, this was probably arguably their best effort, although I feel like we've seen a little bit better, you know, elsewhere. I would also want to bring up, because this is around that era too, the Knockouts of TNA, because I don't think they get enough credit. They started just taking something different that WWE wasn't doing at the time. You know, you had all these bras and panties and eye candy, and you know, they were calling themselves smart, sexy, and powerful, but, you know, we weren't really getting a full glimpse of that. I feel like WWE was trying to build another Trish Stratus, and they were trying really hard with Candice Michelle and that other lady that I can't quite remember, and it just wasn't really working out well. Oh, Maria. She's gone on to do better, bigger and better things elsewhere, but I think they were trying.
Ring of Honor.
Yeah, they were trying to replace Stratus and Lita with these, you know, with these ladies who were started out as eye candy, but they started to ask them to work a little bit more, and you know, it was kind of terrifying to watch it go down. That's why.
Kelly.
Kelly.
Ashley. What about Ashley Moroso? Or Marat Maros? Whatever her fucking last name was.
Ashley Massaro.
Massaro, yes, I remember her now.
I think she was talented.
True, I mean, in that era, it was mostly Playboy, you know, WWE had partnerships with different kinds of things, and Playboy was one of them. You know, it was extra income for them, and, you know, probably extra exposure for them, but as far as, you know, women's wrestling, on the point of, you know, actual wrestling, they really didn't do nothing. I mean, you know, they're mostly, because they were doing mostly sports entertainment, you know. And that was kind of like, you know, that was disappointing in a way. But, like, you know, as to tie this in with TNA.
Yeah. I think that's what made the Knockouts start to actually emerge as something really unique and different. Gail Kim, who started out in WWE, she had kind of like a Matrix kind of character. You know, she was kind of cool and cryptic and, you know, she had this kind of badass vibe to her. She was kind of underutilized in WWE. She ended up jumping ship to TNA, and she started making waves when she started having these awesome matches against, no pun intended, Awesome Kong, who you know, also had a later run in WWE. But I think that was attributed to the success in TNA right from this very era. Just watching the, like, a young, skinny, athletic Kim, you know, going against this big, you know, beastly Kong. And Kong was able to fly at the time, too. So they were having some really athletic matches with some really good near falls. And
Nick, I have a question for you.
Yeah, they had some all-out wars. Go ahead, shoot.
In WWE, Did Kong actually have any matches? Because I remember she would stalk Kelly Kelly, and then she got pregnant. I don't remember if she ever had a match. Do you remember?
Ironically enough, her run as Karma, it started in, I think it was 2011. I think she was hyped for the Royal Rumble. But basically, and then the funny thing is the Bella Twins were like the two top heels, and you know, they were like basically making fun of Kong's weight. And then we had that battle royal the next week where she like started crying in the middle of the ring or something along those lines. And then like she ended up revealing like she was pregnant the week after, and the Bellas were like making fun of her for it. And then she like pointed at the ring and she was, you know, saying something along the lines of, "I'm gonna get you two." I don't think anything really happened after that. But I think that was like kind of like the early coming of the Bella Twins, like as we know them today. They didn't have the success of Total Divas at the time, where you really got a glimpse of their personal life. You know, they were kind of just these big, annoying, loud twins that just switched, you know, that switched like every other match to the other one to win their respective matches. But yeah, I do think WWE maybe dropped the ball a little bit with Kong. I think she might have had a good run. I just think maybe she would have got pregnant at the wrong time. That's just speculation. You know, we will never really know how her run would have went. It had to end prematurely because of this. But and then her in-ring style kind of had a lot of limitations after. As if you watch TNA now, she's capable of good matches, but she can't really fly around like she used to in those old, you know, really awesome matches against Kim and Kong. And this is something I was going to tie to something early on. Kim and Kong actually main evented an episode of Impact with a Knockout Championship steel cage match, which was kind of unprecedented at the time. I think this was, 2008, 2009. Knockouts were getting really out there. You know, he had a whole roster of people. He had ODB. You know, obviously you know her in Ring of Honor now, but she's really got her start in TNA. You had Roxy Laveau.
Shelly Martinez.
You know, she started out as Ariel in ECW, but she ended up moving on to LAX in TNA. I think you also had Mickey Knuckles, who was like this all-out hardcore, you know, knockout. You think like Mick Foley, like
yeah, Mickey James.
If he was a knockout, Mickey James also joined that roster. He had
Tara, Victoria, the beautiful people.
Yeah, they had a very strong roster. I believe it was rumored at some point the Knockouts were supposed to get their own separate television show. If you remember, they even had their own tag team title, but that kind of went on the wayside when Eric Young and ODB co-held the championships. It kind of turned it into a joke. But just the idea that there were two titles in the Knockout division really speaks to how influential it might have been. And WWE was probably, you know, obviously they weren't going to acknowledge it, but I'm pretty sure they had their eye on the competition too. And as you could see, they ended up getting Gail Kim and Kong later on because of this. And then, other people jumped ship and came back to them as well. So I think it's just, it goes without saying, you know, we can't have a women's wrestling podcast episode if we're not talking about the Knockouts.
True. I mean, TNA, if you really think about it, TNA did really bring back the women's wrestling division. Probably TNA had more of a contribution to women's wrestling than the WWE did. As much as the WWE did the Elizabeth angle, the, you know, all that other stuff, WCW did the Medusa angle and all that, ECW had their first lesbian angle. I think TNA actually did something that contributed to the success of women's wrestling that was actual on-the-mat wrestling, not just sports entertainment. Because when you look back at it, they brought back all these WWE divas, and then they brought them into TNA, and they became something different, something bigger, and they ended up doing big things, and that's what TNA is most notable for now. As much as now they're failing, but that's what they're most notable for at that time, especially from that specific period from 2007 to 2011. They were very widely known for that great accomplishment of resurrecting women's wrestling. I mean, if had they gone more longer, they would have gone ahead and, you know, done more. But it's disappointing, you know, to see all those divas leave and then this whole thing happening and everything. I mean,
I remember I was watching, yes, I was actually watching a TNA episode a while back. They had a last knockout standing match between Terrence Terrell and Gail Kim. One of the best diva matches I've ever seen. It ended with Terrence Terrell giving Gail Kim the, she called it the TKO. It's a basically like a diamond cutter or an RKO off the ramp to the mat. And I was just in shock. I'm like, this is amazing. You would never see a WWE diva doing this.
True. I mean, you also see another thing. Gail Kim, she was on Raw, and she, you know, there was this, I was on Raw, I think on a pay-per-view. She got disappointed in the ring. Like, you physically see it. She got so disappointed with the way that they were treating everything and over in WWE. This is, like, during probably the, we can segue this into the PG era. Like, how, you know, WWE was really not doing much in the women's, you know, wrestling angle. They really just had here and there little things going on, and no one really, you know, it wasn't really that relevant. You know, you had Michelle McCool and Layla doing their thing, but it was like, okay, fine. And then, of course, Karma came in. I think originally they were supposed to have, you know how they had that vignettes of, those vignettes of her with the Barbie doll taking the head off and everything, creepily and everything, laughing. I think that was a shot at them. So they were trying to go ahead and get them for that. And then this whole push that was supposed to happen, this whole movement, and boom, it got crashed down. I mean, we can't really say, you know, that what it really happened, you know, what might have happened if that, you know, exploded and went off, you know. But it didn't go off, you know, so we can't say nothing. But, I mean, especially right now, recent news that Raka Khan, I don't know if you guys remember, Raka Khan, one of Scott Steiner's freaks in TNA, was supposed to come back into wrestling. And NXT, WWE was actually kind of interested in getting her in there. You know, so that's kind of a testament. You know, now you have the Shine Wrestling promotion, which is primarily women's wrestling. You know, to see that, you know, that's kind of, you know, outstanding. Like, wow, you know, this is where women's wrestling is at now.
Definitely. I think this is a good transition into the, you know, the PG era. We didn't really have much going on in terms of storylines. Any women, I think one diva to maybe stand out in all of this was probably Beth Phoenix. She was portrayed as the dominant type. No one else really made an impact. The ironic thing is you have Alicia Fox and Tamina around now during this Divas Revolution. The funny thing is they were around back in 2010, but I do think they're a bit more relevant right now because of the whole Divas Revolution thing, but I think that's just because their characters have been overexposed and we're kind of forced to know who they are. But it kind of did them a favor in that we know who they are now, but they faded into the background. Hell, Alicia Fox debuted as Edge's wedding planner. I mean, if you kind of make a tie into how women are debuted versus how they end up being portrayed, it's kind of funny, actually.
True. I mean, you then have her being the crazy, you know, the crazy character, one throwing Coca-Cola all over herself and everything. I don't know if that was a plant for advertisement there. Probably they were. I don't know. But, I mean, that's kind of, you know, that was interesting.
I'm actually going to add to that statement. I do think the most known, the biggest name to come out of the PG era was probably Vicky Guerrero, and she didn't wrestle, but she was arguably, I mean, she was Eddie Guerrero's wife. You know, she never really had a wrestling role, but fast forward, like 3-4 years, she's got the promos down pat. She had the storyline with Edge. I mean, they were like a really dominant staple at one point. she could get heat like no one. I don't think anyone's gonna ever get heat like that as a diva, as a woman. She really took it and owned it. I think the weight jokes were a little bit much. You know, I didn't really see, you know, that side of things. But I do think she was probably maybe the most notable name to come out of the PG era.
Also, Mickie James was actually, I think backstage something went on with that because they started calling her PG James, and that was kind of an issue with the bullying campaign, the anti-bullying that WWE had, and it was conflicting. So that kind of, you know, that was kind of a thing too there. I mean, Vicky Guerrero, no doubt, hell of a talent, hell of a, you know, she could cut a promo on the mic. And I think that's why most people right now, like the booking people at WWE, they're very scared of giving a diva a mic because they know something will fuck up. But, like, as you see now with NXT, they had a chance to work with more of these divas and develop them and develop their promo skills. And now you see these big names, Paige, Charlotte, all these big NXT names that are having, you know, that have really good promo skills. I mean, if you look back, like Sunny, for example, Sunny, you know, she expressed a personality. And people saw that and gravitated to that and said, okay, she's that type. They know about it, 1, 2, 3. But I think now it's kind of hard for divas to do that. So I think WWE is trying to dissect the formula to find out what makes that. But I think Vicky, like you said, Vicky, she sticks out of the whole crowd because she was able to do that without hesitation. She was able to do that 100%. And people latched onto it, believed in it. I mean, whenever she came out, people started booing her automatically. That tells you something. That's telling you that they're getting a response. That tells you that her thing is working. And I think that's why she was probably one of the best, you know, talkers and best people with the least amount of involvement in the ring, you know. That was kind of crazy, you know, to see that.
I think the only time she got a cheer was her last night on Raw.
With the Eddie? I know what you're talking about. With the Eddie that she was doing?
Yeah, she did like a little Eddie tribute taunt thing.
Yeah.
I think that's the only time she got like cheered.
That was dope though.
Yeah, well, that was pretty, yeah. I mean, but yeah, I think it was just because it was her last appearance on WWE. She's kind of gone on to do good things since then, but
I know she just recently got married.
Yeah. I do think this is probably a good bridge into the current era. Just before NXT started branching out, we kind of had maybe stagnancy in the Divas division, and that we didn't really know who to cheer, who was leading this thing.
It was a reflection, I think, because when you seen it, it was like basically a reflection of like how the upper echelon of WWE, how they portrayed, like when they were booking it, like you could literally see what played out and how they felt about the Divas division at that time. Because, you know, they, like if you notice, it was like, what, 5-10 minute spots, you know, you could take a bathroom break. That was basically like the main thing at live events. You saw people, they got out of their seat, walked out a little bit, you know, spread their legs a little bit, you know, make a little room, a little exercise. They went outside, you know, bathroom break or whatever. That was like what the most notable thing about that time was. Whenever there was a Divas match, whenever you knew there was a Divas match and you were watching it, you automatically just on your phone, checking on your Facebook. I mean, even till now, some people, they kind of do that. But, like, I think that time, that kind of brought out, like, you know, what WWE should, you know, they should capitalize on, especially now. I mean, that's probably a little on later, we'll get into it, the Divas Revolution, you know. But true, I mean, in the current era, there's a lot of stagnancy. Like, you know, people were kind of thinking like, oh, you know, what should we do? Kind of confusion. Because I think WWE didn't really give that much effort to the booking of that.
No. One of the most frustrating aspects to the Divas division right now, I mean, even going back a couple years, is the portrayal of their women. They're supposed to be athletes, but they're kind of forced to say, oh, we're athletes, you know. They're not just, you're really just supposed to go out and just show it, you know, kind of like they do on NXT, and I think that's why it's kind of good, because, you know, how many times did Sasha Banks and Bayley have an argument like, we're athletes, this is a revolution, you know, they didn't have to say this, they just went out and had a heck of a match, you know? True. One of the most frustrating things about the Divas division on the main roster is the fact that we don't know half the time who to cheer for or who to boo, because everybody's portrayed as catty women who cannot get along and have to argue and cause drama. Fans don't want to see that. They want to see quality wrestling. And I think that's one of the first things that maybe WWE was starting to get right with this Divas revolution. We're starting to see the match quality go up. The match time went up by a good 5 to 8 minutes. But the problem was we had no emotional investment. We didn't know who to cheer, who to boo. They were kind of just thrown out there as teams. I voiced as many times in my reviews of the television shows on PWO. It's been a constant problem, and it gets in the way of things. And then you go and watch NXT. You have Sasha Banks and Bayley. I mean, sure, Banks is on the main roster too with Team Bad, but the NXT version of Banks, like, man, she has got the character down pat. You know, she is like the perfect in-your-face heel. She's got the look, she's got the style, she's got the swagger of a badass chick. And then you got Bayley, who's like probably the most over baby face ever. She's literally got the whole fan support. She's all about being the ultimate underdog, and she takes that to heart. Even then, like, you had like Charlotte, who is, you know, she went with the character being quote unquote naturally superior.
She's genetically superior.
Genetically superior. Ironically enough, naturally works too. And then you had like Becky Lynch, who I think she was pushed better on NXT because she had more of a platform not to fade in the background. I think probably her performance at NXT TakeOver, the one before Brooklyn, the one that
was Fatal 4-Way, I think, when they had the...
The first one was the Fatal 4-Way between all four of them, but then Banks and Lynch also had their own individual title match.
That was a good one.
I think that was probably Lynch's breakout performance. But even on the way to that, he had a few segments that that really showed, like, you know, what Lynch was all about and like her training background and all of that. We don't really get a lot of that with the Divas Revolution. I mean, sure,
we've had video packages here and there,
but Lynch is completely like lost in the shuffle here. She's like the awkward chick that makes like lame jokes. I mean, she could stand out so much more than that, but she's not really able to with when your debut... I mean, sure, they call up 3 divas to the main roster, but it feels like they debuted 9 people at the same time. You know what it's like to push 9 people at the same time? It's not easy.
It's pretty difficult. I mean, when you see that, like, this probably is... I mean, and you see this with Paige. Paige being the real, you know... do you think, before we get to, like, you know, all the NXT divas and all that, Paige right now, she has this, like, you know, pipe bomb-esque gimmick. Do you actually feel that, like, you know, kind of like an honest, like, shoot type of promo, that style that she's doing right now? Because if you notice, like, you know, she's been doing that for now, like, you know, since she had her real, like, you know, quote-unquote shoot that she had a couple of weeks ago, like, when she lashed out against Charlotte and everything and she broke out.
She had elements of greatness and then elements of frustration, because that promo was actually really good at pointing out all the flaws of the Divas Revolution that were already known. She pointed this out and, you know, kind of made herself like sound like the egotistical, narcissistic type. I mean, it was a quote-unquote heel turn. But the problem is the follow-up completely sucked because we don't know what Paige is really... I mean, I think she's trying to, like, portray...
Well, we don't know yet. I mean...
this canon kind of character.
Yeah,
I
mean...
that... But I feel like they need to go all the way with it. You know, she needs to be all the way heel. I'm really hoping like she was the one that attacked Natalya on SmackDown in the locker room. I mean, they kind of got something there, but then, you know, Paige is also adding to the drama storyline that's actually taking over the Divas storyline. You got Charlotte, who's the champion, you know, in a rematch against Nikki Bella. And
which
the
I personally think she doesn't deserve
Paige
it.
And Natalya. I mean,
I personally think it should be Sasha in the title.
You think Sasha should?
I think it should be Sasha versus Charlotte.
I mean, true. I mean,
the thing is, because of all the crowd chants for Sasha, they're going to be turning her babyface really soon. I heard the rumor was that she was going to be actually thrown into this match with Charlotte and Nikki, but it seems like they're holding off on that to, I guess, give Charlotte maybe an established win before they just go and push Sasha. But I'm curious how they're going to do everything, you know, and try to keep Charlotte a face and Sasha, you know, apparently they're going with the turn. So it's going to be really interesting to see what they do.
I think that WWE, what they're doing now with the NXT Divas, they've made the character, they developed them. They put them on the spot and said, okay, these are these people. This is how they are. How do you feel about them? This is basically how they're presenting it to the WWE universe, like to us, the fans. And we're kind of latching onto it. We know their base from NXT. We can relate with them on that. And we can say, okay, this is who they are. I can't wait to see what they're going to become. But I think what the challenge is now is how is WWE going to develop on that? Because you see, for example, Charlotte, son of Ric Flair. Ric Flair was this ladies' man, you know, big, you know, alpha male. You know, back then there was no restrictions. WWE and, you know, all the other indie promotions and all the other territorial promotions, they made it and made him, they portrayed him as that guy, and he was that guy, and he became that guy. And, you know, that defined him. How is that going to define with Charlotte? You know, how are they going to do that, but with all these restrictions and sponsors? You know, that's kind of difficult. So WWE kind of fucked up and put them in this, themselves in this position where they have to do extra work now. And I think that's the biggest challenge. Because, you know, with the males, with, you know, Seth Rollins and all this, you know, Shield, this, that, it's pretty predictable. It's pretty easy for them probably, you know, probably a little more easier than it is compared to women's booking. I mean, I'm not a booker, but this is how probably, you know, we can portray it, see it, you know, and, proceed this. But, like, you know, I mean, another character, for example, look at, you know, with Becky Lynch. What are they going to do with her now, you know? That's kind of like,
she's
okay,
just
what?
She's just thrown in the mix.
She's thrown in the mix, lost, and it's like, okay, fine. Just like what Paige said, you're just here and no one gives a shit. That's basically what it is. Paige,
you're the least relevant of us.
True. I mean, Paige, what the hell are they going to do with her? She's going to be, okay, fine. She's going to be this narcissistic.
Well, if you remember, when she came up, she was supposed to be the anti-diva. They switched her completely.
But then
she's
AJ.
A diva.
But I think that when, like, you know, when we said earlier, AJ, when she left, that kind of threw the whole Divas Revolution off the ground because they were actually going to put that spot on her. But then when she left, everything just got swerved. I mean, when you look at...
I see kind of a coincidence.
True, there is. I mean, enough.
Leaves?
Yeah.
He fucked up a whole storyline for 8 months. AJ leaves. She fucks up a whole storyline for a few months.
But I think, I mean, WWE, like, when they capitalized on that and they fixed it right away. But, like, you know, it's like a sinking ship. You have one ship and the other ship, right? There's a hole in it. What do? They fill it. But with the Divas, you know, the Divas, it's like it keeps leaking. Like, they'll fill it in with anything, but it still keeps leaking. What is there left, you know? Like, with the Bellas, right? Honestly, I don't give a shit about them. I don't like them at all. I think that they're useless. They shouldn't even be in the WWE. They are just there
They're in the business because of who they were.
Yeah, exactly. They're just there for the drama. They're just there to be stars, reality stars. If you want to be a reality star, go to VH1. Go to freaking MTV. Do that shit right there. This is not the place. You know, give other people that time, that spot.
But people will deserve it.
Exactly. Yeah. And, like, you know, especially now with Eva Marie, which we'll get on to later in a couple of minutes.
Eva.
Yeah, I mean, these people, there's people that are passionate about this industry. They walk in there, and they want
perfect
to be an
example.
They have passion.
The new NXT diva, Asuka. Yep. She's in it because she loves the business.
They have a direct passion. That's the thing. Like Sasha, she wrote about it when she was a little kid. Bayley, too. Bayley liked it, too. Everything. Charlotte. You know, her father was in it. She aspired to become it. She had the motivation to do it. These other people, they're just tossed in there, and they're just there for pawns, you know, for extra stuff. Like, right now with Eva Marie, I think why the most people are booing her, I mean, a lot of people will favor her because of what she does in the ring. But behind the fact is that WWE is probably just using her to be the next big diva, to be as big as John Cena or The Rock. But here's the thing. That's dependent on the universe, on the fans, on what they will see, how they will, you know, determine that, how they can understand that. But here's the thing. That's the power. The power is in their hand, you know? So, like, you know, if they choose to support this person, and then what happens if she turns her back, which most people think that she will, she'll end up going to Hollywood and do other things like that. She basically is stabbed us in the back. So we're just looking at that saying, what the fuck? Like, why should we put our trust and everything on you, you know? That's kind of like, you know, why should we believe in this person right here, you know, as a legitimate person?
So you think she's going to pull same stunt that The Rock did?
Well, when Rock did it, I mean, it was a little controversy, but a lot of people understood and said, hey, listen, he was at this peak. He's got to move on. But when Eva does it, it's like, you know, everybody, you can tell from the beginning that she's kind of fake. Like, she's just doing this. She has no passion for it.
And if you remember back on the first season of Total Divas, she even said she only had, what, a month training before they actually threw her into the ring?
There is a little favoritism.
How much can you actually do, though, in a month?
Yeah, true. I mean, there's a little favoritism there, I think, because she has a look, and I think WWE is just being greedy off of it. And they're thinking of us as fools, you know? So that's kind of, I think that's the perception that people got that hate her, you know? So they kind of look at it and say, okay, so WWE's just fooling us and saying, okay, you know, we should trust this person. When in reality, she's going to take her money, dip, and leave, you know? So we're kind of like, wow, what the fuck? I mean, in that whole period in the PG era, most of the divas left. Maryse, Eve, why did they leave?
Eve left because she was pregnant.
True. I mean, Maryse, she
just
left.
Like Caitlyn.
Caitlyn, too. I mean, most of these divas left because they were either frustrated with how the business was going, or they went off to do other things. I think WWE, what they're realizing now, is that they don't want to do that. They don't want to have people that just walk in and walk out. And that kind of puts a detriment to the WWE, like, you know, the whole women's wrestling, you know, the whole realm of it. I mean, what would you guys say, you know, about that? Like, how, like, you know, if you were brought up as a model or this or that or this, you know, and you think WWE would try to capitalize on that because they're a big company, you know, and what better way to do it than have, you know, a very good-looking female as your top face, you know, as,
well,
your, as your person, you know?
Trish Stratus is kind of probably the biggest example of that.
Yeah.
But true. She did have the benefit of having some form of training already beforehand.
But she adapted to it, and
she was very quick to adapt. Yeah.
Do you think Eva will become just like that?
I think. No. I mean, I do think there's a tiny little bit of effort there, but it's a very, very, very difficult. I think it's almost a waste of time to try to get her to pick things up. It's just not going to click. And as you've seen on some of the episodes of NXT where she forgot to kick out at 2, she had a badly mistimed cue that ended up having Emma win a match she wasn't supposed to. She had another few botches. I mean, these are really big mistakes that everyone's going to notice, and, you know, it's not helping the fact that, you know, she's floundering again. She has improved a little bit in the ring, but, I mean, that's like, that's not saying much at all. And her character is very bland as well.
True. I mean, the way that, like, if you see most of the other divas right now, like, for example, with, what's her name? I'm trying to think. What's her name? Trying to think of recent diva. She...
NXT or main roster?
NXT.
Dana Brooke?
Not Dana Brooke.
Dana
Brooke. She's very good, though, Dana Brooke. She's very talented.
Mm-hmm. I feel like, yeah, I mean, she's got the character and the promo ability down pat. Some of the wrestling, I would just like to see her improve a little bit more, but she's getting there little by little.
I mean,
and I think yeah. pairing with Emma is actually helping both of them out.
True. Sal, are you thinking about Carmella?
No, I'm thinking about Lena Bates. Blue Pants?
Oh, Blue Pants.
You heard about what's happening recently with her?
Well, she has a lot of heat.
No, she left NXT, actually. Really? I think she was kicked off of NXT.
From what I heard, but something backstage happened. Basically, she was supposed to be at like a taping or something, and they were going through rehearsals and stuff. And in the meantime, she was just on her phone the whole time, disinterested, completely ignoring everything, just acting like she runs the whole show. That's supposedly what people have said. But, you know, and then she was just, you know, doing it. And then WWE supposedly said that, like, officials, whenever you talk to them, they would say, that's her last match. That's it. She's not going to be WWE no more.
Well, do you think they could work with Alexa Bliss being NXT champ?
Yeah, I feel like she's more of a challenger of the month, but she has come a long way, and she makes a way better heel than Babyface. And that's the thing. Her, Blake, and Murphy are kind of merging together, and they're emerging together, and that's a really good thing about their act, is they kind of complement each other. It just works. And
then I like Alexa.
She's got the advantage of having two guys on her side, which brings a whole new aspect to this feud with Bayley that's beginning to materialize on NXT. It's good. It's different, you know. But I don't think Bliss is quite ready to hold the championship yet. She's still got a little bit more to develop.
I mean, when you look at like all the great trios, Eminem, Basham Brothers. I don't know. There was another guy too. There was another trio group that had one valet. I mean,
Basham Brothers.
Basham Brothers and there's like a dominatrix bitch. I don't know what his name was.
Oh,
that wasn't Jacqueline. I think that was someone else.
No, I know you're talking. It was
Yo Kim's first character.
No, it was the black girl who won.
That was the black girl.
The first season of Toppin' Off. The second season, I mean. Second season.
That was Jacqueline is won the second season, I think. Is that Nydia? No, that's not Nydia.
It was Miss Jackie and...
Miss Jackie.
I know who you're talking about.
I'm trying to think. But, I mean, you know, as, you know, Alexa Bliss, I think she's much better. I mean, when you saw Melina and you saw Eminem, you saw them as legitimate.
Linda Miles.
Linda Miles? Wait, let me check this out.
That was the girl who won season 2.
Basham Brothers. She was like a dominatrix character.
I don't remember it at all.
Linda Miles, right.
That's a testament to the...
Janiqua.
Yeah.
Janiqua. I remember that. Yeah, I mean, that was kind of like, you know, you looked at that and they built a legacy. You saw that and you thought of them as legitimate, you know? And I think Alexa Bliss is like the perfect piece of the puzzle for that. Eventually, maybe, as she breaks off, we might see something. We're not sure exactly, you know. But we'll have to see. She needs to develop it. But, I mean, you know, we talked about every single era mostly, for the most part. We got 2 minutes to wrap this up. I mean, you know, we can, I think the big major part right now that a lot of people are talking about has gotten a lot of exposure right now, a lot of attention in every realm of entertainment. You see Ronda Rousey, UFC, they have a women's division now. She's a multiple-time champion. You know, she's a very legitimate person right there in that realm, and she's a very notable person, you know. You see in many different other, you know, venues, a lot of women are becoming something now, you know, in a lot of different fields. And, you know, now we have the Divas Revolution, you know, and that was actually brought up by the fans. You know, they tweeted Divas Revolution. We need one. We need it now, you know. Put off too late, or do you think it should have happened a long time ago?
It should have happened a long time ago on the main roster, but I think NXT's success with its own homebred talent was too big to ignore, and trying to bring these ladies up to the main roster, they needed something to grasp onto. So in the wake of their debut, they kind of just called it the Revolution, because the NXT ladies are taking over. Which in theory it is kind of good in terms of like a marketing strategy, but it failed because of WWE's problems with the main roster divas, in that we weren't sure who were heels, who were faces. Bella's went back and forth between heel and face by the week. We had other things as well. The characters weren't. We didn't really know.
Yeah, they're not. About them. Yeah, they're not legitimate. I think because most people they don't believe in the character, as opposed to like let's say recent character. Who am I trying to think of? You can name probably any character if you wanted to. Like if you thought of The Undertaker, everybody knows him. He's a very notable character, long time. They put a name around him. They put him in a lot of different positions, and he's been successfully been able to portray that position.
Because there's very few sports entertainers who could adapt to a new character in a short period of time.
And still,
not that many that can do it.
And still remain, legitimate. Because most people, they'll just look at a person. If they don't believe in it, they won't gravitate towards them. I mean, a big name now, Cesaro, the Cesaro section. In the past, people didn't really gravitate towards him. As WWE kept giving him more and more gimmicks, and they started giving him more and more stuff, now you see him, he's the big dude now. Everybody believes in him because he has a character, he's proven that, and he's getting the respect out of people. But with the women, you don't really see that. Nikki Bella, what has she really done to prove that we should respect her? She's been a champion for, 464 days? All right. So,
yeah,
you know.
She was champion for that long, but if you look at it, how many times did she actually defend the title?
True. That's another thing. I mean, there's a lot of and here's another thing. How many times was she on the pre-show? Was there ever a time where in that whole year period that she was ever in at least the main event before that? Or at least, was there ever a point where we looked at that any of her matches and say, holy shit, that was crazy. Like, I jumped out of your seat. Not really.
Never.
Not really.
No.
You kind of look at that and say, wow, there's other people that can do a much better spot or, just drop the belt. But they kept going and saying, all right, let's just have, Bella, Nikki Bella versus, Naomi for the 50,000th time and build it up as a, oh my God, what if she loses the title? Holy shit. But we all know what the end result is. She'll probably end up holding on to the title.
It's just like her boyfriend. Cena's in a match. Guess what? Cena wins. Nikki's in a match. Guess what? Nikki wins.
It sucks. I mean,
how about now is too predictable.
It is. I mean, especially we talked this in the past about our, in the previous podcast, the internet has made, and the internet, all these different methods of communication have changed how we look at, entertainment now. Now, as soon as everything breaks out, boom, we get it. I mean, when you look at recently what happened to, like, a week and a half ago, Lana and Rusev, they got an engagement. Boom, all the plans for their storyline, out the trash. What are they going to do now for it?
So, from what I saw, which someone leaked the picture online already, Summer Rae is now working with Tyler Breeze on the main roster, which basically means he's probably coming up Sunday and beating John Cena for the U.S. title.
True. I mean, we're going to talk about that in our next podcast and probably hold it off for that stuff, for our Shoot podcast, which will be coming out in the near future. Also, we also have in coming up is the Invasion podcast, which is also another great podcast talking about, the GFW Invasion, TNA Invasion, all this other stuff, all these other promotions, WWE, ECW, all this. And, the whole Invasion angle from the early 2000s following after the fall of WCW. There's a whole lot of stuff to talk about and those kind of stuff too, But
Well, before we close this podcast, I have one question for all three of us to answer. The question is, who, in your opinion, is the best all-around diva in wrestling history? Nick, who is your answer?
I would go Trish Stratus just because of her in-ring ability, her promo ability. She had the look. She was able to take on all three aspects of her character and push each of those three traits at separate times. And she's gone on to become a legend, in my mind.
Sal?
I would say Mae Young. Simply because of the fact, I mean, you know, we haven't actually seen her wrestle in a match. But, I mean, you know, if you look back, you'll probably find some really good matches where she did in ladies wrestling back in the day. But, you know, I think that she probably had the best and as a sports entertainer, especially at her age, at that very old age and still being active in the WWE and wrestling. That's kind of remarkable, you know, to see that. Plus, you know, you saw Moolah, their antics and everything like that. But Moolah was very entertaining. Mae was very entertaining when you saw her. Especially a lot of slip-ups where she cursed out, Layla and Michelle McCool. That was pretty funny. That was hilarious. There's some times where you looked at that and said, wow, she just, I mean, you know, some people look at that and say, oh, she's just old and senile. But some of us are looking at that and say, well, that's just freaking hilarious. That's just freaking hilarious, like that ass. But, yeah. What about you, Rich?
My pick? Gail Kim.
I would say that.
She is very athletic. In TNA, they actually gave her the chance to actually show how amazing of an athlete she is, and she cuts really good promos also.
True. I mean, you also see her, you know, the way she was probably one of the first to jump shift and be frustrated and actually show that frustration. You know, a lot of divas didn't do that. They were either scared of one. They are scared of that. They can't get any other opportunities for work. Or they just think, oh, you know, I don't want to get fired because this is pretty good where I'm set. And I think that's what's really messed up with what's going on with Divas Revolution now. I mean, when you see it now, they're not really being challenged. Like, they're just looking at that saying, okay, I can't do that because it's too this, it's too that. I can't do it. It's too many restrictions on them. Where back then people just said, I don't care. I'm just going to do it. I don't care what anybody says. Which is remarkable now, you know, wherever you've gone now. But, you know, to see what's going to happen with Divas Revolution, I mean, it's crazy. But, yeah, so we pretty much covered everything about the Divas Revolution, Women of Wrestling. This is the Women's Wrestling Podcast. A lot of different topics, Attitude Era, Ruthless Aggression Era, many different divas that played an important key role in progressing that and defining women's wrestling. But the state of women's wrestling now and forever, we won't really know what's going to happen. But all we can say is that hopefully it progresses in some kind of fashion. But, you know, like we said, we'll have to see what goes on after this. But be sure to stay tuned for our next podcast after this, the Shoot podcast. Also, stay tuned for our Invasion podcast. Also, another thing, at the end of the year, we're also going to be having an award show podcast where we're going to have different categories tying up with different things that we liked about this year, things that we'd like to see. Also, we'll have a short segment where we talk about the predictions for the next year, which is going to be pretty interesting to see what's going to happen with the WrestleMania picture, Royal Rumble, and all these other pay-per-views that are coming up soon. Please be sure to check out the Facebook page, check out Pro Wrestling Opinion, great site. You'll see a lot of different great articles and content. Be sure to check that out.